Hey, y'all. It's me, Robin. And just real quick before we get to today's episode, if you are loving listening to the podcast, or maybe you don't know because you've just pressed play for the first time ever, but if you like to listen to things in your earbuds, you are going to be so happy to know that Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors is now released as an audiobook. You can get it in Audible or wherever else you get your audiobooks. And of course, you can still get it in print and ebook. If you go to robingoble.com/book, it's going to give you all the options, including that you could order a signed copy from my local bookstore. Alrighty, y'all. Here's that podcast episode you're waiting for. Hey again, welcome back, or welcome maybe for the first time, to the Parenting After Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Robin Goebel, and you've just joined me on a journey of taking the science of being relationally, socially, and behaviorally human and translating that for the parents of kids who have experienced trauma, as well as parents who just are interested in the science of behavior, or parents who are parenting intense kids with big behaviors, regardless of where they've come from. I'm a psychotherapist with over 15 years of experience working with kids with big behaviors, many of who have experienced significant trauma and some who just have other differences that are leading to their big behaviors. I'm a self-diagnosed brain geek and relationship freak. I study the brain kind of obsessively and even taught the science of interpersonal neurobiology in a certificate program. I started this podcast on a whim, really, just hoping to get you free, accessible support as fast as possible. So the podcast isn't fancy and I do very little editing. But believe it or not, we are quickly approaching the podcast's first birthday. The first episode aired on December 4th, 2000. And it might even be December 4th, the day you're listening to this episode. The day I'm recording it, December 4th, is just a few days away. So that's pretty cool. I didn't really know what was going to happen with the podcast. And here we are, a year later, over 100,000 downloads later. It's pretty awesome. Thank you for being here. If you love this episode or any of the episodes, be sure to add Parenting After Trauma to your favorite podcast player and share it with your friends and colleagues. After you do that, head over to my website and get started on my masterclass about what behavior really is. It's the perfect place to start your journey on unlearning everything that we were taught about behavior. Start the masterclass at robingoble.com/masterclass. In today's episode, I'm super excited to introduce you to Jim Sporleader. He's the former principal of Lincoln High School in Walla Walla, Washington. Jim was a powerful leader in shifting his school to a trauma-informed lens. So powerful, in fact, that they made a movie about it. Maybe you've seen the documentary Paper Tigers. That's Jim. Jim's the principal from Lincoln High School. If you haven't seen Paper Tigers, you're going to want to as soon as this episode is over. Usually, I tell you that today's episode is sponsored by The Club, but I'm going a little different direction today and telling you that this episode with Jim is sponsored by my new 12-month immersive and holistic program for child and family professionals. It's called Being With. Being With has emerged from everything I needed, but had to piecemeal together with many trainings over many years. Being With brings together a solid connection to the neuroscience, creates a toolbox full of tools to help you both be with struggling families and to help you help families be with their kids, as well as a space and the invitation for you to grow in your self-attunement, because that's actually ultimately the most important piece of this journey for both you and the families you work with. I want great therapists to develop the inner resilience to stay in this field and serve struggling families for a long time. So Being With is my offering to actually both the professionals and then ultimately the families that they serve. The inaugural 2022 cohort begins in January And registration is open now through December 17th, 2021. All right, y'all, let's dive into this interview with Jim. It's so, so, so inspiring. Well, everybody, I am here with Jim Sporleader, who you may have been introduced to in the amazing documentary Paper Tigers, which came out a couple years ago now. I don't really remember. But Jim, I'm just really excited and honored, grateful that you've been willing to wake up early and take some time this morning to connect with me, but also really to connect with the people who are listening to the podcast. It means a lot to me that you're willing to do that. So welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity as well.
Yeah. Well, let's just start at the very beginning. And for folks who haven't had the opportunity to already know who you are, or to maybe have seen the documentary, just tell everybody like who you are and how your journey started. And then we'll talk a little bit later about what you're doing now.
Well, my journey started as a special education teacher, and was in the classroom for 13 years, and then went into administration. And I've always had a love for kids. I struggled through school myself personally, and actually always wanted to be the teacher that I kind of hoped I had.
Oh, absolutely. I relate to that statement so much. Yeah.
Had a lot of discipline issues when I was young. And so even as I went into administration, kids were my main focus. But we respond the way we were raised, right? So I was raised in a very traditional home. My father was a minister. Spare the rod, spoil the child was kind of the theory of the day.
And yep.
So even though I was very kid focused, I really felt that my discipline taught kids. I didn't believe that I was against punishing them. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I went to a conference in 2010, yep. after I had transferred from my dream job at the middle school, which I here in Walla Walla, I'd been there 22 years and had every intention of retiring. But I read a report on the Lincoln, which at that point it was called Payne Alternative High School. We changed the name, but it was an extremely painful report,
and yes.
I could see the pain, and not only in the kids, but the teachers, and
yes.
also just public comments. It's a waste of taxpayer money. We should shut the school down. Just full of a bunch of gangbangers and druggies, and so I'm a person of faith. I felt called to go there, and. So when I got over there, the goal was to change the culture and to help these kids feel valued and safe and supporting the teachers. But the environment was so out of control, it was very overwhelming. And even though my strength was discipline and I thought relationships, Robin, I didn't know if I was going to make it. There are days I just didn't know if I could pull it around because the normal response from the kids was F you, for the simplest of requests. And so I was suspending kids like left. And I mean, I remember the first 2 days I suspended 12 kids. And
Wow.
Yeah. You know, trying to get on top of it. And so even with that, we were changing the culture, and finally the kids could see that we were there to advocate for them. But I went to a conference in 2010, and it was the first time I'd ever been exposed to toxic stress. I never had heard the term. And it was Dr. John Medina was the keynote, and what that stress does to the brain. I always believed that behavior was a choice and mm-hmm. that it was my responsibility to help kids learn to take responsibility. And yes. I always felt that I was through my consequences that I wanted to teach them that. I believed every kid could learn. And mm-hmm. I also believed it was, I thought to say that it was out of their control was a cop out. And yep. Here I have this not only nationally recognized, but world recognized speaker saying that with these kids that were coming to our schools with toxic stress, their brains were overflowed with cortisol. That was the first time I ever heard about cortisol. Uh-huh. And, putting them in the fight, flight, freeze mode. And man, he pounded it home and just said, when they're in this state of mind, it's physiologically impossible to learn or problem solve. Yes. And he even went so far as to say, and it's not their fault.
Yes.
And, you know, to this day, I tell people I was hit with a bolt of lightning. Of course, I've never been hit with lightning, but I don't even know how to, I can't even articulate what went through my body that day. But I can say that I became extremely aware that my discipline needed to change, that I was punishing kids and not teaching them. So when I got back to Lincoln, I pulled my staff together and just shared what I learned and mm-hmm. shared that things are going to look differently wrapped around discipline. Through one of our community leaders, I got some training for my staff. And well, I'll tell you, back in 2010, the training came from the mental health world. Mm-hmm. And we had to kind of take that theory and try to make sense of it and find concepts in there in which we could build upon. And we were able to do that. And the most powerful piece was that we knew that it took a caring adult relationship and connectedness if we wanted to get to a place with the kids that we were hoping to get to. And so fortunate that the majority of my staff got behind me, and we started out. And I got to tell you, from the very first kid I talked to, which was a kid that told a teacher to F off, which was an automatic 3-day suspension.
Yep.
That I told, first, I didn't go into my, we're not going to talk to teachers that way here and all that. You know, I just yep. said, Jared, what's going on? What brought that on?
Yeah.
And this kid just unloaded the stress that he was under. And so happened that that day, it was his birthday. His dad had promised him a car. And he ran to the front window that morning and no car. And then that just went on to right. spoiler. My dad has failed me all my life. And he was so angry with himself that he believed his dad was going to actually follow through this time. I'm watching this kid share with me and I'm watching him come down.
Yes.
And on his own, he comes out and he says, the teacher didn't deserve that. It has nothing to do with the teacher. And I want to apologize to him. And then before he left, and I told him, I said, hey, we're keeping discipline in school. I'm not putting you out. Hey, thanks, brother. I really appreciate it, you know. But I'll never forget when he went to the door, he turned around and he said, hey, Spoiler, thanks for talking to me. It really helped. And in my mind, we didn't really have a conversation as much as him talking. And all I did was listen And I would interject that, oh my God, Jared, I didn't know that you, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that you've experienced this. That very day, it was, geez, Jim, you would have put him out for 3 days and you never would have heard the story. You would never heard the pain. And so, I mean, what we know now, I mean, is that if we seek the voice, validate the feelings, it gives self-worth to those that we're working with. And Jared wasn't unique.
Right.
As I changed my approach, that was the response that I was consistently getting from kids. And, you know, here we were going to change our culture and try to help transform the lives of our kids. They transformed me much greater than I was able to transform them. So it's through that approach. And then that was the fuel that lit the fire, and it's still burning inside me today. It's the kids and their stories and what they're going through. And through our journey, we realized that as we began to listen to them, it really drove relationship and connection. And that's my message. That's my mission. We got to drive connection, because our traditional practices drive disconnection. And we'll never land where we want to land through punishment and using fear to try to control behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, so many people, I think, have a story about it feeling kind of like this lightning bolt, like all of a sudden, not everybody, but I hear a lot that there's all of a sudden this like deep aha moment, which sometimes I feel like was our nervous systems like longing to have permission really to like lean in to what I think is like felt in our core all along. But what I do think is extra remarkable about your story is how quickly it sounds like not only did you have this aha movement, but what I would call ego, like with my mental health hat, like ego was pulled out of it. Like it was so easy from what it sounds like in the story you just shared, and maybe it wasn't that easy, to not puff up with the personal. Like, again, like instead of responding with, we don't talk to teachers like that, which is I understand why that response is evoked. And, you know, we're taught to believe that people's behaviors are extremely intentional and extremely personal. So then we respond with this personal defensive way. And that can be a harder habit to overcome, you know, even once the paradigm shift is made, you know, that like our own gut response of like, you don't talk to me that way. Because it can feel so personal. And so to hear that it was, you know, it sounds like pretty intuitive for you to just pause and say, hey man, what's going on? Like, that's just remarkable.
If you're listening to the Baffling Behavior Show as a therapist or some other kind of helping professional, I'll bet you've wondered how to incorporate owls, watchdogs, and possums directly into your work with kids. My colleague, Rose LaPierre, and I co-wrote a course together called All Behavior Makes Sense, Play Therapy with Kids with Vulnerable Nervous Systems. And Rose will be teaching it virtually in May. The course offers 6 CEs, including APT CEs, through the TheraPlay Institute. Part 1 of this course begins May 10th, so you have until then to register, but space is limited due to CE requirements, so I wouldn't delay registering if I was you. I'll put a live link down in the show notes, or just go to robingoble.com/TheraPlay2024.
One of the phrases that we had that came came out early and are trying to put the airplane together while we're flying was we had to remind each other that we got to drop the personal mirror, which is you explained so well. And secondly, is the behavior is not about us.
Yeah.
It's coming from somewhere, but it triggers at school, but we got to just know that, if I put my mirror down, it allows me to stay regulated.
Yep.
If I keep the mirror up, I dysregulate, the kid dysregulates, and then again, that drives disconnection versus connection. But, if I put the mirror down and I'm able to stay regulated,
yeah.
If I have a regulated adult with a regulated student, then we can problem solve. I can get them to the part of the brain. I can teach them other options. I can teach them about how to notice when they're about ready to lose it, what they can do when they're in that position.
And
it really became I felt like I was in a very teachable moment. I felt like I was always teaching.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you had, and I'm sure you were largely, especially as an administrator, you know, largely responsible for kind of cultivating this culture, but a culture of curiosity and co-regulation with your staff, that people were willing to support one another with this kind of big task of, you know, putting down the mirror, which that's hard. That's just really, really hard to do. Like our normal human response, that's hard to do. But when we all come together with this common goal and support one another, it sure does get easier. So that's awesome.
I mean, we definitely had our naysayers. I mean, we weren't 100%, but I've always said it, if you got 80% of your staff, that drives momentum, and the naysayers cannot stop 80%.
Right.
And what I noticed through that experience is that, I mean, everybody was on their own page in their journey. Some moved, picked it up quicker. I had some that were that maybe had some challenges just with their own classroom management, but they were trying. And so I, you know, if I saw baby steps moving forward, I got behind them. And, And what we really began to see is as we were moving and getting momentum is those that did not want to be a part of it or who could not put their mirror down, they struggled.
Yep. Yeah. I like the phrase even that you just use, you know, like, and for some people it is hard to put their mirror down for all sorts of reasons that again, have nothing to do with us. That everybody's on their own journey at their own pace. And for some people it is really hard and maybe even just not the right time for them. And then there's this next question of like, okay, so how does that work within the culture we're trying to create? But again, it's not about them being bad or, and it's just like, that's just where we're all at. So I really like that phrase. The idea of like putting your mirror down. I've not really thought about it that way before, but that's a really very clear and succinct way to look at that experience. One of my favorite parts of the documentary, and those of you who are listening, if you haven't seen it, it's really accessible. It's so easy to Google Paper Tigers and within moments be watching the documentary for pretty low cost. It's super accessible. If you haven't watched it, it's really breathtaking, especially, of course, taking a school full of the hardest, quote unquote, hardest kids, right? The kids that were sent away for discipline problems. And you certainly walk away with this feeling of like, well, if that school can do it, like surely any of us can do it. But there's so many favorite scenes, but the moment in the documentary that really I hold on to so much is the scene where I remember his name, but the teacher is teaching a lesson and teaching the kids about ACEs and toxic stress. And they're, you know, looking at how many ACEs each of them have, like with their own little clickers that they're using. And then the bell rings and class is over. And as the kids are packing up and leaving, he's like, I love you guys. And it's just that moment of that's what this is. These micro moments of, it's okay to say, I love you guys to your kids. And
it's just a normal thing for these kids to hear and they believe it. Like, that's it. And that moment for me was just so powerful.
Yeah. My favorite times of the day were in the morning where we were out front greeting kids as they came up the stairs, and lunchtime and after school. And it just blew me away when the kids would come to school, say a long weekend or even after a vacation, and they'd say, "Oh, things are horrible. I'm so glad to be back with my family." And I think that was a great indicator for us. The I love you really came naturally.
Yeah.
Came naturally as we were connecting with these kids. I mean, my gang kids, you know, I'd pull them in and say, "Hey, I got word that you're pretty active on the street right now, and you need to know I care about you, and I really love you. And if something happens to you, it's gonna hurt."
Yeah.
Or we would have a potential conflict that I would need to bring him in and just say, "Hey, you know, gang stuff's got to stay outside, guys. When you come into school, it's for learning. I can't control what you do when you leave school, but I love you."
Yeah.
And, I always got a kick out of some of the tougher gang kids. You know, when the door was shut and the blinds were down, you know, before they left, they'd say, "I love you too, spoiler." And then, and then when they walked out, they'd have a little bit of a hitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they had to kind of put that persona back on. But, it's an approach, Robin, that worked. I didn't find kids that it didn't work with. I mean, did it work immediately with every single kid? No. Sometimes it could take a year before a student would come around. I would say students that that maybe we weren't able to capture, it was always there could be some drug addiction there, and that was getting in the way. Or some of the kids coming out of the juvenile detention system that were really loyal to the gang.
Yeah.
Those were sometimes a little bit more challenging, but I always say you never give up on them because you never know when one of those are going to make the turn. And I've seen kids make the turn after they left Lincoln. And you gotta have that hope and be there so that when that turnaround happens, a lot of times they come back to us because they knew we were safe and loved them. We've been fortunate enough to have some of those kids come back and get them into the workforce, get some support wrapped around them, and help them continue to build momentum on their way.
Yeah, I think that's so important for people to hear that, of course, sometimes we don't see the impact that we're making. That sometimes, if we're measuring impact by changed behavior, which there's a lot of other ways to measure impact, that just seems to be the one we tend to get kind of focused on. But if we're measuring on changed behavior, sure, sometimes behavior doesn't change. Like, we don't see the behavior change we're hoping for, knowing that behavior change would help that person's life be better. You know, behavior change like drug addiction or gang involvement, right? They're like, yeah, of course, we're really hoping that these kids can find safer ways to be in the world. But, you know, so many people I know, of course, don't ever see that in the time in which they're connected to the children. And, you know, we're really hard to remind them. It's like, but you are changing their brain. Like, there's just no way around it. When we're with people in this connected relational way, the brain can't not change. And so that's happening whether we can see it or not. And maybe something shifts in 5 years, or maybe something happens when this child's no longer in your care, or no longer your client, or no longer goes to your school. And maybe you'll know about it in 5 years, but maybe you won't. But the brain can't not change. And that matters. Like, it matters so much for the, especially like these kids at your school who are used to interacting with adults in ways where adults are criticizing them, mad at them, and justifiably so. Like, their behavior is challenging, but they're not, these kids can't separate out behavior from me, right? All they see are adult eyes looking at them with like, you're a terrible kid. There's something terribly wrong with you. And so for them to come into contact with adults who can separate that out, like you were, you know, and are, like your, you know, staff is, and, you know, now the people that you're training who can really separate, like, hey, like, this behavior, not cool. And I love you. Like, that's, I mean, the impact of that, and the impact of that coming from just one person really just can't be overstated.
I'm interrupting the show real quick because if you happen to be a new listener, you might find yourself being a little overwhelmed by all this information. That makes total sense. I mean, there's like 150 episodes plus all the free resources that are available over my website. It's just a lot. So many folks have asked me, where do I start? So I created a separate podcast stream called Start Here. What I did is I took the 10 episodes that I want you to listen to first, and then I want you to listen to in this specific order, and I put them into a separate podcast stream so that you don't have to search for them. You can just press play and they'll play one after the other after the other. If you go to robingoble.com/start here, you'll be able to get an invitation to subscribe, and then you'll be able to listen right in the same podcast app you're using right now. robingoble.com/start here.
Yeah, and when you have a staff that joins that circle around the kids, and when I say staff, I'm talking about our cook, our custodian, paras, our educate, our secretaries. It takes that full circle. And, you know, we had a national researcher come in my last year, and he took my seniors and took them all the way back to their eighth grade year, and he studied the data of behavior, attendance, and then as they entered into high school, their credits, GPA. And, you know, my last year, our kids averaged 5.5 ACEs as a building. And, we were in crisis. I mean, we were doing crisis management. I mean, it was tough. And, but his findings were so powerful. At the time, he was the only researcher that was able to put a resiliency score, with these kids with their ACEs. And, 70% of the case study that he was studying were performing as if they had zero ACEs. And I mean, that, at the time, that was unheard of.
That's amazing.
That research just went national. But it was powerful. And I've heard Dr. Perry say this as well, but when he was asking kids, why are you successful? They said, I have a family. Mm-hmm. I have someone who loves me.
Yeah.
But through relationship, we know resilience happens. And the powerful statement for me was, they said, I can look to my future now with optimism. And his ending statement was, kids in a trauma responsive environment will thrive. And with Dr. Bruce Perry, you know, he could confuse a lot of us, you know, with the scientific terms and with his research, but he puts it in just practical terms and says the most powerful thing for a person who comes from that traumatic past is human yep. love.
Yes.
And that they will thrive. And so being able to see that happen and I mean, it touches your life. It's with you forever.
Oh yeah. I'm such a believer in the idea that like changing the way we see people changes people. Like if we can change how we're seeing their behaviors and see them instead of just their behaviors, like that changes people. They start to believe, you know, this, the mirror that we're giving them is they get the opportunity to meet themselves in a new way, right? Like I am a great kid who deserves the love of this great guy. And I think that that's, you know, I think there's a lot of hope, you know, especially people who, just like you said, like your school's not unique in the day-to-day crisis of the school and the fires that are constantly being pulled out. And it's really easy to lose hope, to feel despair. How is what I'm doing matter? Can we keep doing this? Do we have the money to do this? Do we have the funding? Like we can start to really go down these places, and all of those are valid questions. And for me, there's almost this moment of like just taking a breath and being like, yes, we have a lot of barriers. And if I can change how I just see one kid and then change how they see themselves through my eyes, that matters. And that actually doesn't cost any money either. You know, it costs a lot of other stuff. I mean, there's a lot that goes into being able to regulate yourself enough to be with a kid in that way. But it's just these micro moments that can be super profound.
You know, I always share, you know, we'll never be at a point where we can reach 100%.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why we can't love 100%.
Oh, I love that.
And that's, as you just said, that's not a budget item. I can love it 100% and I'm not worried about budget.
Right.
You know, I've lost some kids. I mean, suicide. I mean, I've lost some kids that I never thought I would lose. But I try to take each one of those situations and just, love harder and
love harder
and for them. In honor
yes. of and, yeah, gosh, I'm so sorry.
Keep that momentum, you know, keep it going, maybe to the next kid.
Yes.
It's been a real learning experience for me because I've been retired for so long. Is that once you make the transition, it becomes who you are, not what you do.
Yes.
And so, you know, I always share that when I'm on the road, it could be my Uber driver.
Yep.
I'm seeking positive connections with all those people that I meet. Yes. And I always share that when I go to Indianapolis, Maurice is my driver. I got him on speed dial
Yeah,
I haven't been able to see him since the pandemic, obviously, but right. He's become a friend. And once I get to Indianapolis, he's my guy. And I've learned so much from him.
Exactly.
And I appreciate him so much. And
yes,
to the person that's cleaning my room. I mean,
yes,
you know, letting them know, I appreciate how hard, I know how hard you work. Thank you. You know, and
yeah, infinite change in my own personal, you know, like the way I am in the world, the way I'm so grateful I discovered this way of being before the pandemic, because it was hard enough to get through the pandemic, but to do it with this lens, you know, this toxic stress, trauma responsive lens of helping to understand behavior of other people that sometimes looked real bad and being able to find a place of understanding, which isn't excusing, but just understanding and continuing no matter what to always see people's humanity. I agree. It's touched way more than my professional life. It's changed. Like, I feel like every cell of which I really needed. And I'm very grateful for that. So let's talk about, you know, what is going on in the world now, especially in our education setting, is we're in, you know, our third year, basically, of pandemic educating, pandemic schooling. And, you know, as if we didn't have enough trauma in our school systems prior to the pandemic, you know, and what kind of prompted me to think about that in this moment was it's easy for us to sit here and talk about, you know, just loving these kids beyond their, you know, sometimes dangerous behavior or what can be very personal behavior. And, but to talk about that with teacher, like the in the trenches teachers who's as impacted by toxic stress as the kids we've learned about, right? And they work for many teachers before, right? Like it's tough to be a teacher in many places in this country. But now, I mean, it's hard to even, it's just so hard to wrap your brain around that, like the toxic stress of the entire system and bringing teachers and students together. And so I'd love to just talk just really briefly about that, like what you're seeing is helping. Has there been any kind of shift in the work that you're doing or what you're speaking about, given like this kind of cultural trauma we're all experiencing?
Well, one thing that we knew pre-COVID is that 60% of the kids that come into our classrooms every day have witnessed some kind of violence, whether it's domestic violence, could be violence that they've had to endure.
Yes.
And now that we're post-COVID, during the COVID time, what we've seen is that domestic violence has gone off the charts.
Yes.
Crime rates are going off the charts.
Yes.
Teen suicide rates are off the charts. And so we've got all these things that have happened. But one thing that came down, way down during the pandemic was child abuse. And when we have to ask, well, how that happened?
Mm-hmm.
Happened because our kids were taken away from the mandatory reporters that watched after them.
Right.
And so now that we're coming back face to face, I think we all could have predicted it. The level of where kids are at it.
Right.
Maybe not so much, but we knew that our hurting kids being left in an environment that is the reason for all their pain.
Right.
That when they came back, we were going to be seeing some pretty extreme behaviors and all. And that's what I'm beginning to see I wouldn't call it a honeymoon, but things seemed to be okay when the kids came back. But now I'm starting to hear that the behaviors are really starting to surface again. And again, if I'm in a traditional mold and those extreme behaviors come in, I want them out. And so that's the part that weighs heavy on me, is that not only did our kids go through extreme stress, but our teachers went through extreme stress. I mean, I have two daughters that are teachers, and trying to manage my grandkids' education virtually and trying to manage their students' education virtually was extremely stressful.
Yes.
And, you know, but they got a great Nana that stepped in and helped out a lot and helped support in that situation, but the behaviors that are surfacing now, if ever we need a new approach, it's now.
Yes,
and it's very hard to. I want to say sell the approach, but it's very hard to bring people on board when now we have teachers that are, their stress levels are so high.
Right.
It's tough for them to even want to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, the stressed out brain turns to rigidity and control and anything to make something stop short term, which that makes perfect sense. And it does, if there's a part of me, and I don't do a lot of educating or consulting in schools much anymore, because there's so many people who are doing that very well, who are also familiar with like being in the trenches in the school. When I train schools, I'm like, just a reminder to all of you that I haven't been in a classroom since I was a student. So, you know, my job is to give you the theory, you have to figure out what to do with it. But again, we're in a point where there are so many people doing really great, like trauma responsive schools, educating them. Mostly I just get to refer those sorts of requests out now. But there is, it's even for me, I can start to feel this moment of, I don't know, almost like hopelessness and despair when I just think about the science of the stressed out brain and what the grown-ups need in order for their brain to calm enough for them to be willing to be curious about a new approach or be curious about approach that doesn't rely on XYZ tactics. That's, you really need to have a relatively calm brain to be willing to kind of lean in that way. And so it's just feeling like it was already a big barrier, and the barrier just increased at a time when we need it more than ever. And then I just go back, well, that's why I'm glad that's not my job. Like, my job is very rarely to go in and train schools and educators. And there are people out there doing a great job at that. Phew. Yeah. Are you all seeing that? That, like, is it harder even in this moment for people to make a kind of transition in their mind? Or are we seeing like the byproduct of desperation can sometimes be, heck, I'll try anything.
Yeah. I think right now we're still in that transition period. I mean, in a normal year,
yeah,
2022 for me would be booked up.
Yeah,
we'd be looking at 23.
Yep.
Now it's actually it's slowed down quite a bit. And one issue that we have, all the national conferences that were drawing large crowds, people aren't coming because we have a huge sub shortage.
Oh my gosh.
So
yes.
I've got a big conference coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're having a tough, you know, we'll be lucky to break even, but it's people saying, that's my favorite conference. I want to be there, but we have no subs. I can't come.
Yeah. And,
that's everywhere. So I think getting back on track of getting some consistency training and PD for teachers is actually coming back pretty slow, but I get it. I mean, they're sick of virtual. I get that.
Yep.
You know, and to get the face to face, you know, I was able to go to a high school, comprehensive high school here a month or so ago, spend two full days there. And one day was to interview teachers all day long. And I interviewed like seven teachers because they had 15 teachers out.
And wow.
I could just see the stress. I could feel it. And, but I spent one day interviewing kids all day long. And I'll tell you what, that's always say, if you want to get it straight, talk to the kids.
Yep, I agree.
And, so I see it coming back slower. Maybe other trainers are hopping. I haven't heard of any, but I just think because of the system, I think some teachers look at, I can't put any more on my plate.
Yep.
It's just another thing. I can't deal with it, which is they don't understand it's a mind shift versus adding more to
Right.
play.
Right.
Really got to support our teachers during this time. And they need the same, their voices need to be heard just like the kids. And they need to know that they're loved and
Yes.
supported.
Yep.
And, we're going to walk with them and help them out. It's just kind of getting some of them to the point to accept that. Cause you know, we do what we know best. And if we're traditionally trained and traditional mindset, when the bullets start flying, we go back to that.
Yeah.
Yep. Style. And that just creates more stress.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think part of what I hear you saying too is like, we have to, and this is true across the board. And when I remember to pause and think about it, like, we just have to remember the things we believe about kids and toxic stress in kids just applies to humans. And there may be a part of us that's like, I want to, you know, especially because I know parents are listening and mental health professionals who, you know, are working so hard to advocate for their clients at schools, that it's easy to feel frustrated. It's easy to want to like present information in a way that could be received, you know, received as a lecture. But if we remember that the teachers need exactly what our kids need, which is, I see you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, working to, and I'm reminding people, like, some teachers are actually like in physical danger at their jobs sometimes, right? Like, we're hearing not just from their, from what's happening at school, but from the parents, you know, like, we were just hearing these wild stories about what's happening in our communities around the country. And to imagine doing a job where it's like, man, people become teachers theoretically because they love kids and they love this thing that they love to teach, and they want to teach kids about this thing that they love. And now how, what their job really is entails, especially in this, you know, post-pandemic world of, you know, just navigating so many unhappy people, including, you know, the students' parents. And, you know, so if we can really remember, like, first see this person's humanity, first express to them, you know, authentic gratitude, like, hey, thanks for not quitting your job. And I think about that when I interface with mental health practitioners too. And every time I train mental health practitioners, I end my work with them with just a thank you for even still doing your job. Like, thank you for wanting to do your job in the way that you just showed up for 2 hours or 6 hours of you know, continuing education. And like that matters. That's amazing. And I know it's hard. And if we can approach, you know, teachers that way too, like, thank you for just not quitting, for continuing to show up every day and trying to figure out a way to bring some safety to these kids' lives simply by being here in the building. And if we can just always remember that's our number one goal, like, see their humanity first. And then what happens next? You know, yeah, let's have conversations about how you might be able to support them, to support your student in the classroom. But just see their humanity first can really just go a really long way.
I think if we take that approach, we'll start relieving some of our stress.
Yeah. But both, and honestly, both parties, right? Like, if I hold myself to that standard, right? Like, I'm going to see this person's humanity first. That means I have to do the work and care of my own nervous system that allows me to do that. And that's good for me, right? Like, that's good for me and how hard my nervous system works. And so, you know, especially again, for those of you who are listening, where you're feeling a little bit of despair, I don't know what to do, or I don't have enough power to change things. Like the way that we talk about, you know, just one person can be impactful in the life of a child. Just one person can be impactful in the life of this teacher who is, you know, going through the hardest time of their career. And mostly of parents contacting them to not express lots of gratitude to them, you know? And so if we can be, you know, that person who starts with, thank you for everything that you're doing for my kid. I can't imagine how hard this is. That it matters, and it matters a lot. So, well, good grief. Thank you so much again for, you know, the short notice in which you agreed for us to connect. I'm so excited to just bring your voice and the time that we had together to everybody who's listening. One of my primary goals with my podcast is to be continually reminding, especially the parents and the families who feel like they don't have a lot of support in their communities, that we are out there doing the work. And I think that that helps them feel just a little bit more hopeful that there are people out there doing this work, doing it hard, and remembering their kids. So when I just think about all the families and parents and educators and professionals who get to listen, you know, to what you're doing and just have that moment of almost like a breath of like, okay, there are people out there still doing this hard work. I think that really matters to them. So thank you. And thank you for what you are doing out there.
Appreciate the opportunity. In this movement, I always say we're all on the same team.
Yep. And
we have to join arms as well to form the circle. So
yes,
regardless of what role we play, we all have a role. And we need to support one another in that role and encourage one another so that the end result is we want to take hopelessness to hope. And it won't happen unless we really join arms and create that circle of hope. So thank you for the opportunity, Robin.
Yes. I appreciate it. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Oh my, there were so many nuggets of goodness in this interview, right? If you didn't take notes, you can read a summary and get a reminder of some of those best quotes over at robingoble.com/papertigers. Over there, as well as in the show notes, you'll find the links to be able to watch Paper Tigers online, as well as to connect with Jim through his consulting firm, or to check out his book, The Trauma-Informed School, that he's co-authored with Heather Forbes. Y'all know by now that I overflow with gratitude for you, that you're here listening, that you're doing your part, however big or small, in changing the world for our kids, ultimately their kids, and truly everyone on the planet. I'll see you back here next week.
Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day. We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it, and if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audiobook, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you could just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.